Photographer David Plowden always loved trains. As a young man, he was assistant to the train master for the Great Northern Railroad. He started his photography career at about the same time that steam locomotives were disappearing. His early work documented those trains in their final hour. Ever since then, he's tried to capture parts of America that were on the verge of disappearing, from steel mills to general stores. His work has been published in his 19 books and is in the permanent collection of many museums. His new book, Imprints, is a 40-year retrospective. He writes that he spent his career trying to stay one step ahead of the wrecking ball. I asked him why.
Well, I suppose because I feel that we are losing our sort of sense of, well, how do I put it, the sort of sense of roots, the root system of our culture. I started by photographing steam engines long ago when I was a little boy, and I realized that these things were going to disappear. They were very important. And as I looked around, I saw all of the things that I remember as being sort of the fabric of what I considered to be our culture, beginning to go. And I thought, as a photographer, when I became a photographer, that perhaps I should record these things, at least a way of recording them before they disappeared, because I felt that these things represented the very things that we considered, I guess, important. Our relationships with people as represented by a small town, some of our great and wonderful things, like the great bridges we used to build. We still do make bridges, but this is some of the things that fascinated me. I felt we were losing. A shopping center to me is not nearly as interesting as Main Street. I think one of the things that I felt was that we were sort of losing our sense of who we were. We kept tearing everything down.
The first photographic expedition that you made after you became a professional photographer was to Eastern Canada and Maine to photograph steam locomotives. Did you realize by then that they were disappearing?
Oh, yes, very much. And that's why I made the trip.
This was in 1959.
59, the summer of 59, and then the following spring in 1960. And I realized, you know, that I had a few actors. Maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen locomotives that would have to stand for the whole sense of locomotiveness. Everything, it doesn't make any difference to me whether they're on the Canadian Pacific or not, but they were locomotives. And this sort of set the tone of my photography ever since, that I realized that, you know, that I wasn't interested in the specific engine, but I was interested in how it smelt, how it sounded, and really the sort of drama and the wonder of the machine and of all the people that worked on it. And so I worked like fury right up until the last day of the last run, photographing my heart out, trying to convey the sense of what these things were for generations who would not understand them, not know them, trying to make them look interesting and important.
Can you describe one of your photographs that you think captured the sense of power of the steam locomotive and the sense of connection, that it was the train that connected you to the outside world?
Well, there's a picture in there of a locomotive on its very last day, which is on page 82 of the book. The 2412, and it's a big, huge locomotive, and there's a little man coming down the side of the engine. And to me, the idea that man could have created this machine and then run it, though he be so puny in the picture and so small, has always fascinated me, that we can create these remarkable things to do things for us. And I suppose that's one of my most favorite photographs of a locomotive. And it just so happened that this was on the very last, they were taking it out of service at that very moment.
If you're just joining us, my guest is David Plowden. His new book of photographs is called Imprints, A Retrospective. You spent years photographing steel mills, and in your new book, you write that you're very ambivalent about what they represent, and you say, in all the years I have spent photographing the spectacular and the hideous, there's one particular incident that I shall never forget. This was in a steel mill in the Ohio Valley, and I want you to tell what that incident was.
Well, it was when I was in the mill in some place that I was told I couldn't photograph because the company wouldn't want this recorded. And I was taken into this place where they were galvanizing, they were pickling, they call it, sheets of metal. And it was a sort of a medieval chamber. And as I said, it reminded me of pictures of a bombed-out cathedral. It was all filled with sort of sulfurous and vile fumes. And in the middle of this room were these men who, I mean, you know, steel mills are very primitive places. And in many ways, and these men were sort of trudging around pushing these great huge pieces of steel that were attached to chains that were attached to some sort of apparatus above, and they were dropping these things into this pit. And it reminded me of something out of Dante. It was a horrendous place, and I thought to myself, you know, it's this incredibly primitive side of and horrendous side of industry. Here are the people working under these conditions, and then you look at these beautiful shining bridges and skyscrapers that we produce out of steel. And I think that experience of being in there was one of the, you know, it makes you realize why there are so many bars coming away from the mill gates. It's a pretty horrendous place to work.
Do you regret that you were unable to take a photo of the part of the steel mill that you described?
I mean, I really, you know, there was really nothing I could do about making a photograph because I was taken to a place by a man who essentially said, "I'll lose my job if I go if you make any photographs here." The image has been in my mind, and so I have tried to photograph other places that are like that, and in other situations, which try to show that side, that very dark side of the industrial process. The steel mill seems to be a place where everybody is sort of at odds with at war, let us say. And it's an extraordinary place. I mean, here we have taken rock and turned it into metal, and it's a sort of like a man-made volcano. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling.
You have a series of photos of grain elevators, and you describe them as some of the most powerful icons of the century. These gargantuan grain elevators, that you say they're among the most powerful symbols of a boisterous, productive young America. What got you interested in doing photographic studies of grain elevators?
Well, I suppose because, again, I mean, when I first came out to the Middle West years ago as a visitor and when I worked on the railroad, well, the one thing that impressed me was the fact that almost every little town had a grain elevator. And in a way, you know, New England has its little white clapboard church. Every town in the Middle West either has a wooden or a concrete grain elevator. And these things are the center of the town because they are, in many ways, because these are farming communities. And so they are filled with the grain that is produced by the farmers, by the hinterland. And to me, they were almost like temples. I mean, they were the icons of agriculture, and to me, of the heartland of this country. So I did become fascinated with them. What was always interesting was because you'd be standing on a street photographing one of these things, and some guy would drive up to you in a pickup truck and say, "What on earth are you photographing?" And I'd say, "Photographing the grain elevator." And he said, "What for?" And then I'd say, "Well, because it's the most important building in town." And truly, if you look across the prairie, I mean, they're like little miniature skyscrapers. And they're also huge. I mean, the ones in Buffalo and Minneapolis and some, and Eden, Oklahoma, and places like that, I mean, they are absolutely as massive as pyramids. I mean, they're huge. And it's this massiveness, just like the steel mill and the grain elevator, which to me represent the American spirit and the sense of, I mean, we're a huge country. You know, make no little plans, said Daniel Burnham, and we didn't.
No, it would be possible to see these huge, very industrial-looking grain elevators as being monstrous.
I know.
But you don't see them that way.
They are. Yeah. No, I think they are magnificent examples of what we did best, which was to make useful things.
My guest is photographer David Plowden. His new book is a 40-year retrospective called Imprints. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with photographer David Plowden. He spent much of the past 40 years taking pictures of parts of America on the verge of disappearing, from general stores to steel mills. Now, you have a picture of a general store in your new collection of photos. It's a general store in Cedar Bluff, Iowa.
Yes.
It was taken in 1987. What was significant about this store?
The significance about that store was it was about to close. And the people that had run the store had been running it for 50-odd years, and they couldn't get the people who delivered goods to come off the interstate highway, which was only about 15 miles away, to deliver things to them. So they had to have it sent by UPS from someplace in Kentucky. They simply couldn't compete. And they were selling out everything they had. And as the lady who ran the store said to me, well, we think that it'll last until school's out. This was taken in February, and school was out in May or June. And I went back there, and the doors were shut. And to me, this was, you know, it was going into that store was like going into Cy Davis's store in Putney as a kid. I mean, the same things were on the shelves, and it was a time warp. And I photographed it because I knew that it was, I mean, someone told me that store was going to close, and it was one of the last general stores in that part of Iowa. And so I went very specifically to photograph it.
Did you send a copy to the owners of the store?
Oh, yes. I always try to send copies of pictures to the people that I photograph. And I always tell them when I'm doing it that I'm doing it for a book or for some specific project. And I'm very open and upfront about what I'm doing. And because I think in the first place, it's a privilege to go into these places. It's not a right. And I feel, you know, very reticent about just walking into somebody and start photographing without explaining the reason I'm doing it. And I explained. I said, look, I understand you're not going to be in business much longer, and I wondered if I could document what is an important part of the town. And of course, she said, absolutely.
Of all the photos that you've taken of places and things and bridges and boats and trains that have disappeared, is there anything that surprised you because it disappeared? Is there anything you took a picture of that you really didn't expect to disappear, but it did anyways?
Well, yes, I guess. Well, I never expected that I would sort of see the partial demise of the steel industry. I never really expected when I was growing up that I would see the change, the profound change of small towns and communities being replaced essentially by shopping malls. I had no idea what that, you know, so the things that I photographed in the beginning, I sensed that things were going to be changing. This was something I guess started very early with me. But when I actually discovered that they were gone, I suppose it was always a tremendous shock. And one of the things, you know, I spent 6 years photographing bridges, and I crossed back and forth across this country many, many times, and Canada, photographing bridges. Because I knew that a lot of these great and wonderful bridges that we had made were going to be replaced. And when I would look at some of these bridges, I would think to myself, how could anything so strong and so magnificent be in danger of being torn down because it's too narrow or because it's in some way or another outmoded. And I always, when I go back and look at these pictures of bridges, I'm always amazed at how many of them are not there and how these great and noble structures, which really, to me, represented the very best of what we could do, have vanished.
You know, because you've spent so much of your life traveling around the United States photographing things, I think you really have a sense of the U.S. as a country. I mean, most of us feel like we live in a town or a city or a state or a neighborhood or something, but you seem to really have a sense of the United States.
Now, that's nice of you to say, because I really have poked around in almost every part of the country except the South, and I have been there. But you know, I tell a story that, you know, my cousins are you know, my father was English. I have a lot of English cousins, and a lot of people friends who used to come from England, and they used to come, and they used to fly to New York, and then they would fly to Boston or to Washington, and sometimes they go to Philadelphia. And then they would fly across to Los Angeles and then fly home across the pole. And then a few days later, we would have a nice little letter saying how nice it was to have seen America. Well, of course, they hadn't seen anything except the coasts. And I have spent my life being an East Coaster and growing up in the East, I felt I didn't know very much about this country. And when I went to work for the railroad in 1955, after I'd graduated from college, I suddenly realized I knew nothing about my country, nothing at all. And so I felt, and I was absolutely overawed by the scale and by the immensity of the land and by the grain elevators and the small towns. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm an American, I'd better learn something about my country. And so I have spent the rest of my life exploring it. And I really have. I don't feel I can call myself an American unless I have seen it.
Well, David Plowden, I want to thank you very much for talking about your pictures with us.
Thank you.
David Plowden's new book of photographs, Imprints, is a 40-year retrospective.